one of my favorite songs. So, thank you, John. I'm going
to
use this.
We're going to give this to you as an option.
See, we're practicing here, guys. See? That's one of my favorite songs because we are, right?
Yes.
We're walking with God. Every time we're talking with God, right? When we're holding people, we're holding them from the love of God, right? So my message today, usually what I do is I host. And we have someone come. I read the bio, and then I introduce them. And then I sit down comfortably. When Reverend Catherine asked me to speak, I said, yeah. And I kind of turned around to see who it was that said yes. It was me. So I don't have a bio. I'm not going to read it to you anyway. But I am going to tell you, when I first started talking was when I was in ministerial school. And Founders Church was where Ernest Holmes taught. And so when we took our homiletics class, we had to go to Founders Church, stand at the podium that our founder stood at. So this is a really big place. And he had a little step stool that he stood on because the podium was so high. And I thought, boy, you know, if he needs the step stool, I do too, you know. So it was great practice. It was great because I recognize that everyone that comes after Ernest Holmes, we stand on his shoulders. And all the ministers before us, we stand on their shoulders. So I stand on Reverend Catherine's shoulders. I stand on Reverend Michael Beckwith's shoulders. And that is my bio for today. Okay. So my talk today is taking off the mask. Isn't that a pretty mask? We have a lot of pretty masks, guys. And it's besides Halloween, we have a lot of pretty masks. So what I wanted to do was talk first about Halloween. I always thought, Halloween's coming, right? Where did it come from? Does anybody know where it originated from? So I started to really do some research around it. And Halloween started as a pagan ritual in Ireland. And actually, pagan means country folks. It doesn't mean anything other than that. We have all these labels that we put on it, but it really meant country folks. And what they did was they were celebrating their harvest. And it was a three-day holiday for them. And it was called, and I probably don't have it pronounced right, Samhain, which actually translates to November. So this was their celebration before November. October 31st. So they believed that the veil between the other world and this world was the thinnest on October 31st. So they knew that their ancestors could return and walk the earth on the 31st. So they would build these big, big, big bonfires so that the ancestors knew where they were going. The other thing they did was they slaughtered a calf, they threw the bones into the fire, and blessed them for the harvest for next year. This was the ritual for Halloween. It wasn't called Halloween. So what else they did was, and you guys might be familiar with this, they bobbed for apples. They dressed in costumes. They wore masks. They celebrated. That was their celebration. They also did something that they had this thing called dumb supper, where they would cook this supper and they would sit in silence and eat this supper, inviting the ancestors in. I have a different idea of what a dumb supper is. It's usually when I'm cooking, you know. So that was the tradition back then. And then the 7th century came. The Catholic Church attempted to stomp out the tradition by claiming November 1st is All Saints' Day. They tried to put it together, thinking, these people won't pay any attention. We'll just do All Saints' Day. Well, as you know, Halloween is still going on, right? They brought it to America during the famine, when they had the big potato famine. And in New York, they had these huge luxurious parties. They dressed up, they played, they did all this stuff, and then these people would come and they would do card readings, tea leaf readings. Mostly they were women. So this was when the Catholic Church decided to call them witches. That's where it came from. And we all know what happened during that time, right? So now we know the church's attempt did not work. We're playing in Halloween all the time, right? We've got a party, Gourmets for God, Dancing with Dracula. That's the one that's coming up this weekend, right? Everybody's getting dressed for Halloween, right? My question is, what happens after Halloween? What happens when you take the costume off? What happens when you take your mask off? What happens? We have other masks that we put on. We have a mask for work. We have a mask for play. I think it's the Dodgers and the Red Sox. I don't know. They've got costumes that they dress in, right? All you football fans out there, I see different costumes for different teams. So we're always dressing up. We always wear these masks. Some of them are fun. Some of them are not so fun. So what happens with us when we accumulate these masks? First of all, where did these masks come from? Usually, at a very young age, we decide, not us, but our parents and society. We have to conform to society, right, as kids, in order to be loved and accepted. So we begin to search for a way to belong and to find our tribe. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes in the beginning, as children, maybe we go to school and somebody picks on us, somebody makes fun of us. Maybe something happens to us. So we start to build a defense mechanism. We put a mask on. Jung calls this archetypes. So see if you can relate to any of these archetypes. I call them masks. The good girl, that's a mask. The athlete, look at, we've got athletes everywhere. Mask, hero, villain. My favorite was the rebel. I love being a rebel. I was a hard one. If you talk to Reverend Catherine, she'll probably tell you I still am. So this is when we started to establish beliefs, ideas, and feelings of not being good enough. We started to block ourselves from living fully. We started to mask ourselves. So as we learned from Mary's reading, if we don't allow ourselves to receive the truth about ourselves, we develop a conditioned acceptance of things and shows up as a disconnect from God. We go, well, you know, this is better than nothing. If we start to hear ourselves tell these beliefs and tell these stories, these are the seeds that we get planted in our life. So we begin to believe that we're unworthy. This unworthiness, this belief in our unworthiness is our mask. These ideas, these beliefs, they block the flow of our giving, and they don't allow authentic conversations with each other. So I was watching this show with Joel Osteen. He's a minister from Texas, and he was interviewing Tyler Perry. I don't know how many people know Tyler Perry, but he's a very, very successful African-American filmmaker. And listening to him talk, he talked about his childhood. He was a victim of domestic violence. His mother was a victim of domestic violence. His father only had a third grade education. So the thing about him and his life growing up was that his mother would always grab him and say, "Come on, son, we're going to church on Sunday." So he had that foundation in him at a very young age. He believed in God. Totally believed in God. And when he would come home, he'd hide underneath the porch. That was his safe space. He found a safe space on his own. So as he got older, what he recognized was, there's got to be something more than this. There's got to be something more than this. That's the seed he planted when he was a teenager. There's something more than this. And then he had this realization. He said, if God gave me the breath in my body, then I am worthy. If God gave me the breath in my body, Breathe that in. Then I am worthy. He woke up. He has become the most commercially successful African-American filmmaker in history. He's had several films, stage plays, and television shows. That's his mantra. God and his breath and his worthiness. So just like Perry, it's time to remember who we were before the world told you who you should be. It's time to remember that. So how do we begin to remember? In Ecclesiastes 3:1, we learn, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. So first, we have to move beyond the conformity from childhood, where we learned how to survive in the world. That mask goes down. It did a great job, and now it's time to move on. That is a season. We've moved from that season. And then what we do is we move into deeply beginning to discover who we are. Teenage years, 20s, 30s, my case, 60s. But we still discover that, right? And then we realize and we lay down our masks. We embrace who we are. We begin to take classes. We create circles of support. We develop discernment around who we go to for support, such as practitioners, ministers, therapists, best friends, even family. And then we begin to embody our true nature. Then we start to share it with the world because we know the truth of who we are. We are worthy. We have laid down our masks. Reverend Michael Beckwith states it this way. You cannot be your authentic self without becoming intimate with your true nature, without going beyond personality, cherished beliefs, likes, and dislikes. To discover your core self, you must be willing to break the agreements you have with mediocrity. The moment you stop running the racket of staying small to please society, family, friends, or bosses, your original face will start to come into focus, and you will know who you are and what you really are to do here. You are an emanation of the universal one. So it's time for us to put down our masks. It's time for us to wake up. We begin to live in the flow. We are receptive in the inspiration that is flowing through us, and we give joyfully, inspired by the trust that we've developed from within. So now the world is ready for us. The world gets to see, and we know that we are necessary and we are needed in this world. So I have just a little simple exercise for us to do. What I'd like you to do is just take a breath. Breathe in as much as you can breathe in. Now breathe it out, and don't take another breath. Can you do it? Can you not breathe in? No. You have to breathe. The breath is the receivership. God gave us both. The breath out represents giving. The breath in represents receiving. We're really great at giving. How great are we at receiving? So breathe in again. You're receiving. And again, you're receiving. Ernest Holmes states, the person who can throw himself with complete abandonment into the limitless sea of receptivity, having cut loose from all apparent moorings, is the one who will receive the greatest reward. So in recognition that we know that God is life itself, we're an essence and an energy that pulsates through our physical body and the body of our affairs. You are the vessel for which this energy gets to receive this holy inspiration. You receive it with your breath, and then you get to inspire others to experience the same essence and energy as a gift of love and worthiness. So my invitation to you today is allow yourself to wake up to your true nature and realize you're a gift of the beloved. You are the very breath. You're the very breath of God, and you are worth it. You are needed. You are necessary. Know this, embody this, and breathe. Thank you, and so it is.